So several years ago, ABC News ran a story. There have been similar stories like it, but an 18-year-old approached a lady driving her Porsche and decided he was going to carjack the Porsche. A lady did the smart thing, got out. He got in the car, attempted to drive off, and after several attempts, he just opened the door, got out, and ran away. And you may be thinking, why? Well, it turns out that the Porsche had a state-of-the-art anti-theft system called a manual transmission. He didn't know how to drive a stick. My first three cars were sticks, were manuals, I used to enjoy driving a manual. I did. My second car was actually a 1979 Chevrolet pickup truck, and it wasn't four on the floor. It was three on the tree. I had to learn to drive all over again. You know, I did not have power steering, brakes, anything like that. My greatest fear in life was getting stopped on a hill with a car behind me. It was a difficult truck to drive. I grew to like it, but most people don't even make very many manual transmissions anymore. Most people don't drive manuals. And the reason is because they don't want to go through the gears. Right? I mean, they don't want to deal with the clutch. They don't want to be in traffic. You know, you're holding the clutch down, your legs start shaking after a while. But they don't want to go through the gears. They don't want to deal with driving a manual and going through the gears. And we approach life that way a lot of times. We don't want to go through the gears of preparation for whatever it is that we have to do. We don't want to go through the gears of preparation for whatever God has planned for us. We just want to do it. We want to be where we want to be. And if we know God has something for us, we want it to happen right now. We don't want to allow him to work in our lives to prepare us for whatever it is. Sometimes we have to go through the gears, though. Sometimes we have to allow God to do the work that he has for us, in us, before we fulfill the mission that he's given us. And David is a perfect example of this. When we see David in 1 Samuel 17, he is going through the gears. He is yet to take the throne. He will be king. He's already been anointed as Israel's next king, but he is not the king yet. God is preparing him. God wasn't finished preparing him. David's been serving in King Saul's court, the current king of Israel. He has been shepherding for his father, so he's kind of splitting his time between those two things. And I'm sure wondering at times, why am I still doing this? Why am I not yet the king? But God is preparing him through those experiences, serving in Saul's court, shepherding sheep, preparing him to be a shepherd later on, and preparing his heart and his trust, his faith in God all along the way. And he was doing exactly what he was supposed to be doing. He may not have thought that all the time, but he was faithful to do those things, shepherding, serving in Saul's court. And because he was faithful in those areas, he was exactly where he was supposed to be. And God was able to prepare him. We'll be in 1 Samuel chapter 17. We're going to start in verse 32. I'm going to read several verses. We're just going to read through this story. It is the story of David and Goliath. And we will read through this together, starting, I said, verse 32, but we'll start rather with verse 20 and read all the way through verse 37, then verse 40, and then verses 50 and 51. We'll start with verse 20. So David got up early in the morning, left the flock with someone to keep it, loaded up, and set out as Jesse had charged him, his father. He arrived at the perimeter of the camp as the army was marching out to its battle formation, shouting their battle cry. Israel and the Philistines lined up in battle formation facing each other. David left his supplies in the care of the quartermaster and ran to the battle line. When he arrived, he asked his brothers how they were. While he was speaking with them, suddenly the champion named Goliath, the Philistine from Gath, came forward from the Philistine battle line and shouted his words, which David heard. When all the Israelite men saw Goliath, they retreated from him, terrified. Previously, an Israelite man had declared, "Do you see this man who keeps coming out? He comes to defy Israel. The king will make the man who kills him very rich and will give him his daughter." The king will also make the family of that man's father exempt from paying taxes in Israel. David spoke to the men who were standing with him. What will be done for the man who kills the Philistine or removes this disgrace from Israel? Just who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? The troops told him about the offer, concluding that this is what will be done for the man who kills him. David's oldest brother, Eliab, listened as he spoke to the men and became angry with him. Why did you come down here? He asked. Who did you leave those few sheep with in the wilderness? I know your arrogance and your evil heart. You came down to see the battle. What have I done now? Protested David. It was just a question. Then he turned from those beside him to others in front of him and asked about the offer. The people gave him the same answer as before. What David said was overheard and reported to Saul. So he had David brought to him. David said to Saul, "Don't let anyone be discouraged by him. Your servant will go out and fight this Philistine." But Saul replied, "You can't go fight this Philistine. You're just a youth, and he's been a warrior since he was young." David answered Saul, "Your servant has been tending to his father's sheep. Whenever a lion or a bear came and carried off a lamb from the flock, I went after it, struck it down, and rescued the lamb from its mouth. If it reared up against me, I would grab it by its fur, strike it down, and kill it. Your servant has killed lions and bears. This uncircumcised Philistine will be like one of them, for he has defied the armies of the living God." Then David said, "The Lord who rescued me from the paw of the lion and the bear will rescue me from the hand of this Philistine." Saul said to David, "Go, and may the Lord be with you." Then Saul attempts to give him his armor to fight Goliath. David knew better. And in verse 40, he took his staff in his hand and chose 5 smooth stones from the wadi and put them in the pouch in his shepherd's bag. Then with his sling in his hand, he approached the Philistine. Goliath sees this young, small kid come out, begins to mock him, and David responds with essentially saying, "It's not I who's going to defeat you. God will defeat you today." And then verse 50, David defeated the Philistine with a sling and a stone. David overpowered the Philistine and killed him without having a sword. David ran and stood over him. He grabbed the Philistine sword, pulled it from its sheath, and used it to kill him. Then he cut off his head. When the Philistines saw that their hero was dead, they fled. Now from this, there are some lessons, life lessons that we can all learn for when we face giants in our lives, which we do. Every day we face giants, some of them larger than others. But there are some lessons we can learn from this. And the first is this: giants are real and they are very hazardous to your spiritual health. Giants are real. In life, we encounter obstacles that seem insurmountable. For the Israelites, an actual literal giant named Goliath. He was called the champion, which literally means the man of the in-between. All right, so a good way to understand this description is that Goliath would come out every day from behind the Philistines, their battle line. He would come out in between the Israelites' battle line, the Philistine battle line, and he would stand between and mock them. He's this huge, over 9 feet tall giant, 9 feet 9 inches, covered in armor, a helmet of bronze, his upper body covered by a coat of mail that weighed 126 pounds on its own. His legs are covered. He's this huge guy. He's taunting the Philistines daily. The man of the between, standing out in the open, in between the battle lines, mocking the nation of Israel day after day, and they were terrified. Goliath was a real giant standing there like an indestructible force. No one thought he could be defeated. Now, we face giants. We face giants in this church. What are some of the giants that we face at Wall Highway? Well, one of the largest giants that I see us facing right now is the giant of 200. What do I mean? Churches, the 200 barrier is incredibly real, and we have hit that 200 barrier at Wall Highway Baptist Church. It's not a barrier that can't be overcome, but it is a barrier that we face. It is a giant that we face as a church. And there are a lot of reasons that is a barrier. It is a barrier that we need to be willing to tackle by the strength of God, as David tackled this giant and defeated this giant. But it is a barrier nonetheless. And there's some things, even over the past year, that have become obvious that are hindering our ability to get past that barrier. There are several things, but one of the most obvious I see, and that others have seen in leadership, is that we have increased ministry happening here. We have, I believe, 13 committees. We have 8 equipped teams, and then several other ministry teams all operating increased ministry, which is great. We're doing more, but what we have seen is that there is a great need for training, leadership training, that includes the following, which we will tackle together this next year. Improving communication between committees with the church, ministry teams, equip teams. Also, improve record keeping for continuity, and as new members come on, old members roll off. We need to develop and or update our policies and procedures for these teams. Not to make everything, not to overkill and overdo everything in terms of administration, but we have rotating committees. We have people coming on and off equip teams. We have ministry teams that change and transform. We need to make sure that we understand what we're doing, how we're doing it, and so that when new people come on, they will know what to do and know what's been done in the past, the decisions that have been made in the past. These are things that you can get by without doing very well when you're a smaller church. But when you grow, if you're not keeping up with how you do things and keeping up with decisions that you've made, it's going to be really difficult to get past that barrier. We need to understand the responsibilities of each committee and ministry team. They need to be understood, those responsibilities due by each member of that team. New people coming on need to know what that team does, that ministry team, committee, whatever the case may be. And people that have done it before may need a refresher in what the responsibilities. We need to be clear on what each team does and what their responsibilities are. And then leaders, I want you to know, leaders of those teams, ministry teams, committees, equip teams, I want you to know how to cast a vision for ministry for that team that, yes, fits the overall vision and mission of this church, but that you and your team can take ownership of and operate under, unified with each other and with the church as a whole. All of these things and more. And here's how we're going to do that. We're going to do this through a series of leadership training sessions this year that will include committee members, equip team leads, and ministry team leads. We're going to work together to tackle this giant that we face. We're going to work together to overcome that. There's the giant of discipleship that we face as a church. New people come in, and we need to be able to connect with them and disciple them and help them get connected to Christ and within the church. And that's going to be a major emphasis. We're not starting a new church-wide campaign like we did last year in terms of major events. We will still have bridge events this year. We'll have equipped teams doing ministry this year, all the things that we have begun over the past 2 years. But our main emphasis this year is going to be on discipleship. And Caleb and I are going to start a series on that in 2 weeks. We're going to co-preach a series. I've never done that before in all my years as a pastor where, I mean, yes, we tag-teamed the Advent series, but he and I are actually going to co-preach as we do this series. If you know Caleb, you know his heart is discipleship and missions, and we have been working on this together, and it has been an amazing journey. And we hopefully will equip you, the church family, through that and other methods to be intentional about discipleship, discipling the way that Jesus discipled. And that's going to be a focus. We're going to tackle that giant together. And then there's the giant of change with all of this. I mean, we live in a community that's changing rapidly. We were just talking the other day. Cliff Farms, none of that was there when we moved here 6 years ago. I mean, it was nothing. And look at it now. I mean, our community is rapidly changing. Our church has changed tremendously. I mean, there's so many faces that I see that are here today that weren't here 6 years ago. We have new people coming in. We're going to have new people coming in. All of the things that I'm talking about represent one word that's difficult for all of us, and that's the word change. And that is a giant. Overcoming that 200 barrier requires change. That is a giant that we together will face. By the power of God, will overcome. You know, human beings were actually made for change. We fight it like it's of the devil himself, but we were actually made for change. Our bodies are changing all the time. We're told that in our bodies, the cells are always dying, being sloughed off, and being replaced so that every 7 years, we are basically a new human being. Now, I don't know about you, but I look in the mirror. We were looking at pictures the other day, and I see a lot of differences in myself. A little more around here, a whole lot more white up here and in here. A few wrinkles that used to not be there. I told Mandy the other day, I was looking in the mirror and I'm like, I look like an old man with all of these bags and all this sort of stuff. I've earned every gray hair I have. I'm proud of them. But still, I look a lot different than I used to. We change. Our bodies are changing all the time, yet we fight change. There's nothing we can do to stop change. We have to be prepared to face the giant of change. And the only way we can do it is by the power of God and united as the people of God. And personally, what about you personally? There are giants I'm sure you're facing personally. I have giants in my life. Maybe it's a broken relationship or a troubled relationship. Maybe your marriage is in trouble. Maybe you have a relationship with a family member, a child that is difficult. There could be you're facing the possibility of losing a job. You don't know what's going to happen in your career over the next year. Maybe you've lost a job and you're dealing with that. Maybe it's a personal addiction that you're battling, something that you struggle with daily and you just don't think you're going to be able to overcome it. It's a giant that's like Goliath, just seems insurmountable. There's nothing you can do, it feels like, to overcome it. Maybe it's financial problems that you're facing. You've got debt or you've got things you know are coming and you don't know how you're going to take care of it. You don't know what the solution is. Maybe it's the loss of a loved one that you've experienced over the past year and you're adjusting to life now without that person in your life. Maybe it's the illness, your own illness or the illness of somebody that you love. Caring for a spouse or a parent. Or maybe it's a child who has an illness, and that just seems that giant. There's nothing you think that can be done about that. And those giants, there could be a number of other giants that you're facing. Those are just a few possibilities. But the giants we face are very real, but they also have to be slain. Those giants are put there for a reason. And there's a way, even if it's something you have to deal with for the rest of your life, you can still slay that giant. You can still overcome that giant to where you experience the power of God and his sufficiency in your life. They have to be overcome. Why? Because giants are preventing progress in your spiritual life, my spiritual life. They are preventing progress. And Philippians 2:13 tells us it is God who is working in you both to will and to work according to his good purpose. He has a purpose for you. And if that giant is standing in the way, then you are not fulfilling his purpose for you. Also, God expects you to overcome that giant by his power. You'll never experience his full plan for you until that giant is overcome. God expects you to trust him and to experience his defeating that giant through you. And the truth is, God allows giants in our lives in order to reveal his power. He allowed that giant that you are facing, that we are facing, so that we can trust in him and depend on him, and that we can experience his power in our lives as that giant is defeated. He has the power to overcome the 200 barrier that we face, the challenges we face as a church with the discipleship, all of the other challenges that we face. He has the power to overcome your giant, your addiction, heal your broken relationships, find you another job, take care of you while you don't have a job. He has the power to heal that illness that you have or your loved one has, or to give you the strength to live with that illness each day. He will heal you, whether it's this side of eternity or on the other side of eternity. He has the power to give you the strength you need to face the giant that you are facing. But we must be willing to go through the gears that God has for us, because in the midst of facing that giant and overcoming that giant, there's preparation that God wants us to experience. There is something He is preparing us for in service for Him. There are lessons that we have to learn through dependence on Him as we are facing those giants and overcoming those giants by His power and strength. We have to allow God to continue to work in our lives, because the key to defeating the giants in your life and my life is understanding that giants must be slain God's way. If we had our way, we would do away with them immediately. But sometimes it's going to take a little while, because God has something planned for you in the struggle, in the enduring. The giant has to be slain the way God intends for it to be slain. There's only one correct way to slay a giant. And it starts with having faith in the one true God, just as David did. We have to have faith in God alone. And sometimes we need to be reminded in the midst of facing the giant who our enemy really is. Israel's history with the Philistines was difficult. In 1 Samuel chapter 8, they begged for a king because they wanted someone to lead them to defeat the Philistines. The Israelites feared what they saw instead of fearing the consequences of disobeying God and not trusting Him. They feared the Philistines. They felt they needed an earthly leader. They forgot that God was their king. What they had forgotten was that God had always delivered them from their enemies. They didn't need an earthly king, but they wanted one anyway. Their real enemy was not Goliath or the Philistines. It was a lack of faith and trust in God. They didn't trust God enough. David knew this. He understood this, and he was willing to respond in faith. And the truth is, for us, we should fear the consequences. We should fear God more than we fear the giants that we face in life. Not cowering in a corner, afraid, running away from God, but a healthy respect and reverence and awe of God, and understanding the consequences we will face if we choose to disobey God and we don't trust God. If we don't have faith, the consequences of that are far worse than the harm that the giant we face can do to us. The Israelites had forgotten that. David understood that completely. David's fear and respect of God came from his relationship with God. David had fellowship with God. He had this incredible faith because he had spent time with God. As he's shepherding those sheep, God is working on him. He is fellowshipping with God. He knew God. He knew the power of God as he defeated those lions, those bears. He knew the power of God. He had experienced it in his life. He knew God's power to defeat whatever enemy that he faced. He was more afraid of disobeying God than he was of dying at the hand of Goliath. He knew God had prepared him for that moment, for that time. He had seen God show up. He had seen God's power before, and he knew God was going to display his power on that day against that giant. But the key here is we can't just show up to face the giant and say, okay, God, you do your thing, if we haven't had a relationship with him prior to that. David had an intimate, a man after God's own heart, intimate relationship with God. How did he know that giant was going to be slain? Because he had fellowship with God. God had told him that. He knew God's heart. And he knew God wanted to do that, to display his power through him that day. The only way he knew that is because he had communicated. He had communed with God. His relationship fed his faith, strengthened his faith. He knew where God was working because he intimately knew God. He was faithful in his life as well. Yeah, I'm sure there were times he was wondering, why have I been anointed king and I'm still out here taking care of these smelly sheep? Why am I playing a harp for the current king? But even with that, he remained faithful to both of those tasks. He continued to be faithful to what God had him doing in that moment. He obeyed his father to bring those supplies, which put him in the position to defeat Goliath that day. David was prepared because he was faithful. He was willing to go through the gears of preparation so that he would be in a position to be used by God when it was time. You know, Saul did what he thought. He thought was best for David. He tried to give him some armor, but David knew it wouldn't work. He couldn't fight with that armor. Number one, it didn't fit. Number two, he didn't know how to use it. He had never fought with those weapons before. So what did he do? He went to what he knew. He picked the weapons that he was familiar with, a sling and five stones. Why did he choose these? He had used them before. God had prepared him, shepherding those sheep. He gave David the right weapons, the right experience, the perfect faith through a relationship with God. He was perfectly prepared for that moment. It was exactly what needed to happen. God placed him in exactly the right place at the right time with the right weapons to defeat that giant. You know, a lot of times we're going to feel like we are in a position that's like a holding pattern. We know God has something for us, but we're not there yet. But we have to continue in faith, trusting God. I've shared with you before, but I'll share it again. My last year of seminary in New Orleans, I thought I would get to New Orleans. God would open up a door for me to pastor a church there while I was still in school. That did not happen. Instead, he opened up a door for me to intern with a pastor in Kenner, Louisiana. And I spent about 6 or 8 months with that pastor, just following him around, learning things about pastoring that I did not learn on staff at a church. I was able to, had the time to be able to meet with him and go to visits with him, meetings with him. And also in the midst of interning in New Orleans, Mandy and I, in our second year of marriage, were able to focus on our marriage without the pressures of ministry. Our marriage grew on our own in New Orleans during that time more than it would have, I believe, had I been on staff at a church somewhere. We were also able to be a part of a young married's Bible study group on Sundays and during the different ministry activities that we did with that group, where we were poured into by the pastor as well as another older couple in the church, and we were able to receive that without being on staff. God used all of those experiences to prepare us for the first church that I pastored. Had we not had that year of preparation, I would not have been as prepared as I was for that first assignment out of seminary. I didn't understand what God was doing. I did not enjoy substitute teaching and working in a factory warehouse that did not have air conditioning in New Orleans, Louisiana. But I did all that while God prepared me for my next step. God was taking me through the gears of preparation, and we were prepared. He's giving you right now, wherever you are, if you'll remain faithful, he's giving you just the right weapons that you need to defeat the future giants, the future battles that you will fight in this spiritual warfare that we experience every day. The weapons that we fight with are perfect if we're faithful, if we're in intimate relationship with God. The weapons we will fight with will be perfect because the weapons we will fight with will be from God, just as they were for David. David told Goliath, "The Lord who has rescued me from the paw of the lion and the paw of the bear will rescue me today. He will rescue me from your hands." It's pretty bold for a lanky teenager in front of this 9-foot-9-tall giant, heavily armored giant at that. But see, God had tested David already privately. I mean, I would argue that a lion or a bear is just as scary as that giant. God had already tested David privately with the lion and the bear. And now he's going to test David publicly. He's going to use David publicly in front of everybody to prove who he is. Not David, but who God is. And you see, the truth for us is this. If we are faithful, and you're going to have private battles that you face that nobody else knows about, maybe only a few people know. But if we are faithful to God in the private battles, then God will see us through the public battles that we have to fight as well. He's going to test you privately. And if you remain faithful, he will use you publicly for his kingdom and for his glory. But we have to be faithful to him always. If we are willing to go through the gears of preparation, God will bless us with victory when we face the giants in our lives. 2 Corinthians 1, 9 and 10 says, indeed, Paul is speaking, he says, indeed, we felt that we had received the sentence of death so that we would not trust in ourselves. Why did we go through that difficulty, he says? So that we would no longer trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such a terrible death, and he will deliver us. We have put our hope in him that he will deliver us again. God will take you through private battles. He will take you through struggles. And if you will trust him, you will realize his power. And you will stop trusting in yourself and your own abilities. And trust in him. And depend on him. And experience his power in a mighty way. Alexander McLaren said that faith has the right to argue from the past to the future because it draws from God, whose resources and patience are equally inexhaustible. David was a shepherd. He used what he knew, what God had prepared him with, stones, a sling. He was familiar with those things. So if God is preparing you wherever you are, you know he's got something for you in the future. Be faithful where you are right now. Do what you know you're supposed to be doing right now. If you know your gifts, use your gifts wherever you are to serve God right now. Be faithful in spending time with God in his word. Be faithful in sharing your faith. Every opportunity you get, be faithful in discipling someone who's younger in the faith than you are. These are all things that no matter where we are or what he has for us in the future, these are all things that we know we should be doing every day. Be faithful where you are right now. And in all things, depend on the Lord. Don't try to fight your battles on your own because you will lose every time. We have to depend on him and fight those giants his way. Verse 45, David said, 1 Samuel 17, David said to the Philistine, you come against me with a sword and spear and javelin, but I come against you in the name of the Lord of armies, the God of the ranks of Israel. You have defied him. Today the Lord will hand you over to me. Today I will strike you down, remove your head, and give the corpses of the Philistine camp to the birds of the sky and the wild creatures of the earth. Then all of the world will know that Israel has a God. In all things, remember this simple statement, yet profoundly true. Whatever you face, remember, the battle is not yours and mine. The battle is the Lord's. If he has put you in front of a giant or put a giant in front of you, it is from him. He wants it to be slain, but it's not your fight to figure out how it should be slain. It is his battle. It has to be done his way. Philippians 4:13 says, I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me, but it has to be through him, by him, his way, his strength, his power. Alexander McLaren also said, faith unarmed is armed with more than triple steel, and a sling in its hand is more fatal than a sword. If it's done God's way, it can be done. A few years back, around 2012, I guess, so more than a few years back, the Houston airport was experiencing some problems. People were complaining. They were spending 88% of their time in the airport waiting for baggage when they arrived and went to receive their baggage. They increased the staff, and the lines got a little shorter, but people still complained. They were still having to wait a long time for their baggage. So their solution was this. They took baggage claim and moved it further away from where the arrivals were. People had to walk further, but they didn't have to wait as long. When they got there, the complaints almost completely stopped. It proves something very important. This is why they originally put mirrors outside of elevators. So people would occupy themselves, I guess, by looking at themselves. When skyscrapers started going up in New York, people complained about waiting on the elevator, so they put mirrors out there and people were occupied. They didn't mind waiting. And it shows a point. It shows a truth here. You know, we don't mind waiting in some circumstances and we hate waiting in other circumstances. And the airport shows a very important truth. If you've got something to do while you're waiting, it's a whole lot easier to wait. If you're waiting on whatever God has in store for you next, get busy doing, serving him right now. There's plenty to do for him while you wait. Because the more you serve, the more faithful you are doing what you know you should be doing, it's a whole lot easier to wait. Serving God where you are, doing what you know you're supposed to be doing, creates contentment in your life. And it's easier to wait on the Lord. Don't just sit and wait. Serve while you wait. And it'll be easier. God will reveal himself in his time. Go through the gears of preparation, whatever that is for you, for me, for all of us. It takes time. It takes that P word that we hate to pray for. It takes patience. It's frustrating at times, but it's worth it when that giant comes across our path. We trust in God. God defeats that giant, and we celebrate the victory with him and God's people. It's then that we find that the reward of defeating that giant is well worth the work of preparation. What are the rewards? Well, for one, the giant's silent. Once it's defeated, it's no longer there to taunt us. Goliath had no more effect on the Israelites. Why? Because he was dead. Here's a real profound statement, okay? Are you ready? Giants are only giants until they cease to exist. Real profound, right? But that giant, while it's standing there, boy, it seems like it cannot be defeated. But once it's defeated, it's no longer a problem. We're not intimidated. We're not afraid anymore. The giant is silent. That's one of the rewards. Also, the king is pleased. Saul was very pleased with David. He got all of it. It was promised to him, all of those things. And our king will be pleased with us when we defeat those giants by his power and in his way. There's nothing greater than a well done, good and faithful servant from our king. Also, the critics are silenced. David's brothers were critical of him, you know, questioned his motives. Goliath was critical. You can see behind him the Philistines laughing at this scrawny little kid. All his critics were silenced once that stone sunk in and Goliath fell to the ground. No more critics. If we do it God's way, there will be people that question us. There will be people that criticize us. Not all of us will understand what God is doing. But if we do it his way, we will see him work. And then those critics will be silenced once God's power is revealed. And then your progress toward the fulfillment of God's plan takes a step further. And maybe you are doing what you know he has prepared for you. But trusting in him, going through the gears of preparation, experiencing his work, prepares you. And once you reach that point where God is working, it's amazing to see him work through you and accomplish what he has for you. But guess what? The preparation never stops. There's always, I know so much more about God's plan for my life and ministry than I did way back in New Orleans over 20 years ago. But there's still so much I don't know about what God has in front of me. Every day is a walk of faith where God reveals a little bit more and shows me a little more of who he is and a little more of how he wants to use me in this church, in my family, in my relationships, as a husband, as a father, as a son, as a son-in-law. I mean, God shows me more each day. He prepares me a little bit more every day. And I have to be willing to continue to go through those gears of preparation. And that triumph for David was another gear. He went from third gear to fourth gear. Just another gear for him. It would be another 15 years before he would become king. He still had a lot of preparation, a lot of preparing that God wanted to do in him. There would be a lot more battles. There would be a lot more triumphs. There would be trials. There would be tragedies for him. But God would use every bit of it to prepare David for what he had in store for him. So you may be sitting there thinking, what if I can't do it? What if I can't wait? What if I can't defeat this giant? What if I crumble under the pressure? What if I fall to pieces? Well, if you trust in God, you won't. If you do it his way, you won't. How do I know that? Well, Paul tells us in Romans 1:20, God's invisible attributes, that is his eternal power, his divine nature, have been clearly seen since the beginning since the creation of the world, being understood through what he has made. As a result, people are without excuse. The God who created the universe will hold you together, will strengthen you. As long as you are faithful, as long as you trust in him, as long as you have a relationship with him, he will hold you together and strengthen you for the battles you face. Laminin. It's a word I learned several years ago now. I learned about it from a sermon preached by Louis Giglio. It is a cell adhesion molecule. And basically what this stuff is, it is a molecule, and these cell adhesion molecules, these molecular structures, they determine what protein they are. There's between like 10 and 60,000 of these in the body. We don't really know how many. But one of them is this cell adhesion molecule that's organized into this structure. And this is not a structure that I made up. This is a scientific design, a scientific diagram, rather, of the cell adhesion molecule laminin. What does that look like? Looks like a cross, right? Here's the interesting thing about this particular cell adhesion molecule. It's like the rebar of the human body, that steel stuff in concrete that makes it strong. It's what holds us together. It's what holds us together. It keeps basically your skin from falling off your body, your muscles attached. It keeps you together. This is in all of us. It holds us together. This is the scientific diagram. Do you want to see? Hold off on the second. Do you want to see what this looks like under a microscope? Say yes. All right, here you go. This is it. Now, I don't know. Again, like the rebar of the human body, and it's crazy to me that the stuff that holds us together looks like a cross. I believe God is intentional in everything that he does. And I don't know for sure, but I just have to believe that God created this in the shape that he did to remind us to always remember that the only thing that holds us together is the sacrifice of Jesus Christ for our sins and his presence in our lives. You won't crumble in front of that giant. We won't crumble as long as we stay faithful to our Savior, as long as we continue to serve him faithfully and have a relationship with him faithfully, because he's going to be the one to hold us together. We are held together. I immediately think about the words of Paul in Colossians chapter 1. He's talking about the supremacy of Christ and the sufficiency of Christ. He says, "For by him all things have been created, things in heaven, things on earth, all things were created by Jesus and for Jesus." But then the next verse says, "And he, Jesus, is before all things, and in him all things hold together." Everything holds together in Jesus Christ. The passage goes on to say, "For God was pleased to have all his fullness dwell in him," Jesus, and through him to reconcile everything to himself by making peace through the blood of his cross. If you are a child of God and you put your complete trust in him, if you and I put our faith in him completely, we will not fall apart in the face of any giant that we face. Jesus will hold you together by his power because of what he did on the cross. So wherever you are, whatever you are going through, wherever you are in life, whatever giants you're facing, struggles you have, God has put that there to continue to take you through the gears of preparation for however he wants to use you in his kingdom work and the plan he has for your life. But the only way we can face these giants is if we are children of God. The only way you will hold together is if he's the one holding you together. If you don't know Christ, he's calling you to himself, to accept that sacrifice that he made on the cross that we are reminded of by a simple picture in a microscope or a scientific diagram. The cross of Jesus is where he gave his life so that you could be forgiven of your sins. You can trust him today. But for those of us who know him, we can't face and defeat those giants unless we do it his way. And this first Sunday of 2025, Maybe he's calling you to himself in a new way, to recommit yourself to trusting in him, to spending time with him, to being a man or a woman after God's own heart that's shown through your intimacy and your pursuit of him daily, in his word, in fellowship, in prayer, in communion with him. Maybe he's calling you to renew your commitment to him by serving. Maybe you're waiting on God and you're not serving the way you know he wants you to serve. You're frustrated and you're waiting. And God says, if you'll get busy doing what I've already told you to do, I'll reveal to you what I want you to do in my time. Maybe it's a time for refreshing, renewal for all of us, whether we're faithful or not, to trust in God anew, to be willing to face giants together that he calls us to face together, as a family that he calls us to face as a family, and individually by his power and his strength, not wavering in our faith, not doubting what he's doing, but moving forward together and trusting God to do what he's called us to do and to reach a lost and dying world that Jesus wants to save. Let's spend a few moments in